The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Germ Warfare at TNTRadio.live. That's my email address, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Send me an email, feedback, whatever you want. But do let me know where in the world you are. I do appreciate all the emails that I receive quite regularly. Got an email from somebody by the name of, oh, I hope I'm not going to butcher this, Harumi Hayashi. Harumi is Japanese and living in New Zealand, in Hawke's Bay. I have no idea where that is, but I'm sure Jeff does. Jeff, do you know where Hawke's Bay is? No, Jeff doesn't have any idea where Hawke's Bay is. Okay. I'm guessing it's somewhere in New Zealand. But you know, Jeff, you're not really very helpful, are you? I mean, like, you're supposed to be helping me out with this show, and like, you can, I just get nothing from you. And by the way, Jeff is in the studio. He is making me sound absolutely awful for the rest of my show. So if you have any hate mail, please direct it at Jeff. Jump into the live chat. It is on TNT Radio's website. It's on the front page. I have it open. Say hello. Let me know where in the world you are. We are chatting Russia-Ukraine geopolitics today. Got a great guest coming up. I've chatted to him before. Super smart guy. And I love this whole Red Pill vibe, you know, like of TNT, where we chat about the counter-narrative. You know, we don't go with what the establishment media is saying, because as you've probably come to realize over the last few years, you can believe nothing that's coming out of establishment Western media particularly. And it's weird saying that for me. I suppose one could argue that I'm Western, but I live in South Africa and we're part of BRICS. So we are somewhat schizophrenic in the sense that we kind of like our American imports and exports, but we're also friendly with Russia and China and the other countries part of BRICS. Anyway, my name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
At the risk of being canceled,
it's a battle for free speech against the left.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yet again, Dmitry Orlov, thank you for joining me in the trenches. How are you, my friend?
Very good. Glad to be with you again.
Yes, it's been quite a while since we last chatted. A lot, strangely, has happened in the last year or so.
Indeed. It's been a crazy year. The world has changed.
It has. And do you think for the better or for the worse?
Well, I think some of it was inevitable. I started speaking about the collapse of the United States, a decade and a half ago, based on my experience with the Soviet collapse, wrote several books on the subject, and it was taken as humor to start with, and then the humor stopped being funny. And now some of the people are still laughing, but a lot of people are crying because they see it happening. Mm. They see the U.S. actually collapsing and no longer really being what it used to be. But the surprise is that Europe and the rest of, the Anglo countries have pretty much folded under the United States. They're no longer independent nations. Not only is Washington run by some very mediocre people, but these people also manage to connive themselves or somehow intrude on the politics of all these other countries, so that all of these other countries now just completely ignore their own people and do whatever Washington tells them.
So you haven't been on my TNT show before. So let's just quickly get the boring stuff out the way. For those who don't know you, what is your biography, your background?
I started out as an engineer, worked in electronics in high tech, moved on to the internet, was an internet engineer and then systems architect, etc. And then once that career ran its course, I became a writer and blogger. And I do this to this day. About 6 years ago, I moved back to Russia, having lived in Boston most of my life. Now I'm established in Russia and beginning to publish books in Russian. So that's basically my career path, from a high-tech engineer in Boston to a writer in Russia.
Well, obviously, because I'm speaking to you while you're in Russia, it's very evident that you are living in an absolute tyranny. You are just being censored all over the place. It's just very lucky that I'm able to talk to you, Dmitry.
Well, I don't know that there's anything tyrannical about what's going on here, really. It's none of that is really noticeable. It's pretty much a free-for-all. I mean, this is much freer than, say, the United States. People can pretty much do or say whatever they want. And unless there's an actual article in the criminal or the civil code that says, no, you can't do that, you're pretty much left to do whatever you want. And even if you do offend, usually it's just kind of a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on my snark, because the irony is that in the West, all the censorship is happening. I mean, RT and Sputnik are banned everywhere. YouTube takes down videos that are somewhat supportive of the Russian cause. I mean, it's just ridiculous that the entire thing has flipped.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's there are limitations on language in the West, and I have to actually watch myself, because they don't exist in Russia. You see, in Russia, you can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. The idea is, you know, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. Whereas in the West, everybody has the right to be offended by anything at all, and nobody has the right to offend, which is ridiculous, because if you don't have the right to offend anyone, you can't get anywhere with any discussion.
Mm. Okay. I was trying to segue into where we are. So where are we now? I mean, I listened to Putin's speech yesterday, and man, every time he gives a speech, it is just incredible. And I'm not saying that because I've got posters of him above my bed. I don't. But my word, he really has a way with speaking, doesn't he?
Well, yes, he's a consummate politician. He's very well versed in the art of the rhetorical art, and he also has incredibly good grasp of facts and numbers. So it's an unbeatable combination. There is really nobody in politics in the world that really compares to him.
I think Empire of Lies is one of the greatest speeches I've ever heard or read. I say read because I don't understand Russian. But Dmitry, it's a work of art, isn't it?
Well, yes. He has a way of defining things and in a way that sets the agenda for the next several months and possibly years.
Okay, so where are we now?
It's very impressive.
Okay, so give me your synopsis. Where are we now?
Right now, we're at a point where we're just basically waiting for the West to fold. It's been determined that the West cannot fight. They do not want to fight. They cannot fight. All they can do is throw obsolete weapons systems and ammunition at the Ukrainians, who go out and die. You know, that's pretty much what's been happening. And, you know, it's going to continue happening for a while longer, but the end is clear. Basically, you know, the industrialists have won. The post-industrialists are dead in the water. And the European way of doing things, the Western way of doing things, has failed.
You know, if you look at CNN or any kind of Western media, you would be told essentially that Putin slept badly, woke up in a bad mood, and decided to bomb Ukraine. Obviously, that's complete nonsense, but this is the absurdity coming out of Western media. Dmitry, would you mind taking me briefly through the chronology of how this invasion or military operation started?
Well, it started when the West, the collective West, handed the Ukrainian president an ultimatum: either break with Russia and go with us, or you're going to have lots of trouble. He didn't quite say, okay, I'm breaking with Russia, because he couldn't very well do that. He has figured out that if he did that, the Ukrainian economy would collapse. This was 9 years ago. And so he was overthrown violently and had to leave the country in a big hurry and almost got killed while doing it, and now lives in Russia. And then these basically very strange people paid for by the Americans took over in Kiev, basically Nazis, and started imposing all kinds of limitations and started repressing the majority Russian population. You have to understand that the Ukraine is basically part of Russia. There was never a country called the Ukraine. It's just a creation of the Bolsheviks. Lenin thought this country into existence. If you look at the Encyclopedia Britannica from 1911 and look up the word Ukraine, it says Ukraine, in quotes, borderland, the name formerly given to the territory comprising the following Russian provinces. That's all it is. And so when these, you know, Nazis who thought themselves, quote unquote, Ukrainian took over, that was a shock to the entire population, Russian population of the Ukraine. Some of them tried to fight back unsuccessfully, and a couple of provinces, Donetsk and Lugansk, managed to win their independence. And then they were attacked militarily with support from the West. And what ensued was 8 years of basically terrorism against civilian population in these two provinces. Oh, by the way, and before that, Crimea, which was never, ever, ever part of the Ukraine at all, it was lumped in accidentally, declared its independence and then rejoined Russia. It's been Russian for centuries before then. And so basically what went on for 8 years was what you might call it a civil war or a terrorist campaign is what I would call it. And during that time, Russia tried to negotiate a peaceful settlement to the conflict. But it turned out that the Western efforts to negotiate were actually a sham. They were a smokescreen for pumping the Ukrainian military full of weapons and money and training them according to NATO standards to go and attack, which they did about a year ago. They actually went on full-on attack, preparing for an invasion of Donetsk and Lugansk by basically firebombing cities full of civilians. And that's when the Russians intervened. They said, well, no, this won't stand. And the Russians' first effort was to see whether the Ukrainians would surrender, whether they would actually be reasonable and surrender. But the Ukrainians did not. And so the Russians retreated behind defensive lines and have been absolutely demolishing the Ukrainian military. I don't know how many drafts they've had already, five or six. Probably 300,000 Ukrainians have died. The preponderance of weaponry of all kinds, artillery especially on the Russian side, is such that it's basically a game of slaughter. The Ukrainians keep throwing soldiers at the front line, and those soldiers keep dying. Pretty much we're expecting that later this year, NATO will run out of equipment to give the Ukrainians. To some extent, that's already happened. And the Ukrainians will run out of manpower, and then that'll be it.
that's a great summary. Dmitry, I don't know if you mind, but I quickly need to do an ad break. I'll be back with you shortly.
You should hear what Dirk Pohlmann is talking about.
Maybe you explain to our listeners how you became enemy of the state. Well, maybe not number one, but at least in the top 10 in Germany.
In 2021, for the first time, I went to Donbass. Didn't plan to stay there, but after I've seen what is going on there, so that this Ukrainian army is killing civilians there already for 8 years. I was shocked and I decided to stay. I opened a Telegram channel and started to tell about the story of Donbass, about the people. After the special operation of Russia began, my channel got pretty popular in Germany because I was the only German on the ground. And Germany was supporting the Ukrainian government from the beginning, so they didn't like what I was doing and started to talk in a very bad way about me in all news and television, and even blocked the bank accounts of not only of myself but of my parents too. And yeah, this is how I became an enemy of Germany. I'm now in Russia and I can't go back because they also opened a criminal case against me.
The Dirk Pullman Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Lorry from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
Climate alarmists make the same mispredictions of doom decade after decade and century after century. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, Dimitri, I was laughing now just before we went to the break, because what you said is completely true. And yet the media keeps twisting and turning. And it's mind blowing that people cannot see. And I guess it's because of the fog of war, or the fog of propaganda concept, isn't it? The propaganda machine is so powerful.
Well, it's not even just the power of the propaganda machine. It's basically the trap that people find themselves in when they lie. Basically, if you start out being a little bit hypocritical and you just sort of, you know, breeze by and somehow muddle through and it all works out in the end, and your little bit of hypocrisy can be ignored, can be forgotten, right? But if the situation keeps getting worse, then you're trapped in your hypocrisy and your lies, and you have to lie more and more and more every day. It's sort of a race to the bottom, you might say. And so the West is trapped in this situation where they cannot really come clean and say, oh, well, yes, we had this brain dead idea of weakening and ruining Russia in order to plunder its mineral wealth and generally destroy it. And to this end, we armed and equipped a bunch of neo-Nazis. And these neo-Nazis are right now running amok after, killing lots and lots of innocent civilians, old people, children, etc. Lots of people maimed, an entire street of gravestones of children that have been killed by Ukrainian shelling for the past 9 years. The Alley of Angels, they call it. They cannot just, out in the open say, well, look, we are absolute lying bastards. Please kill us. Can they do that? I don't know. I don't think that anybody has the courage to do that. So they do the inevitable. They just continue lying.
What is the foundational argument used by, I suppose, the US and NATO for this aggression towards Russia, and of course, pumping military into Ukraine? Where does it all go back to?
Oh, well, it's very simple. Russia and China and various other countries do not want to be ruled from Washington. They do not, I repeat, want to submit to rule by Washington bureaucrats. And and CIA, etc. They want to go their own way. The development path that the U.S. chose for itself and its allies is a failure. It's not a development path at all. It's endless depression. And so Russia is doing its own thing quite successfully. Thank you very much. It just wants to be left alone. And the U.S., of course, cannot have that sort of disobedience. So because of that, Russia had to be destroyed. Now, Russia wasn't really doing anything wrong, per se. It was being strictly legal in all the possible ways and generally cooperative. So it had to be slandered. So its leader had to be slandered, its system had to be slandered, and that's where the lies, the entire lying campaign took off. And of course, if you orient yourself in the universe using a bunch of lies, you probably end up in the wrong place. You know, if your map of the universe consists of lies, you're not going to get to your destination. And that's pretty much what's happened.
Now, we're talking about the deep state here. I mean, I don't think Trump was as aggressive towards Putin as, say, Biden is. I mean, Biden is clearly anti-Putin.
It makes absolutely no difference at all, believe me. Excuse me. The United States is not ruled by its president by any stretch of the imagination. It's not even ruled by its congressman. It's ruled by the profit motive. That's it.
And the supposed rules-based order.
Oh, the rules are whatever they say they are. And the rules only apply to others, not to them. So they're allowed to break their own rules, not others. That's what that means.
So what is the strategy to the best of your knowledge? Is it go into Ukraine with everything that they've got? And do what? What is their next plan to somehow invade Russia?
Well, look, you have to understand that these are cowards. They're deadly afraid of Russia. They know that the nuclear deterrent that they have is rusty and old. You know, there are probably mice nesting in some of the nuclear bombs that they have because they're 40 years old. What piece of equipment do you have in your house that's 40 years old that you can still plug in and use reliably? Well, that's the entire nuclear arsenal of the West. And Russia has rearmed by 93% by now. It's all new stuff. And what's more, the West has no ability to make new weapons of any size and quantity. You know, they say, well, we have some Abrams tanks. Well, what those are rusty hulks that they basically sandblast and repaint and stuff recycled engines into because they don't know how to make those tank engines anymore. And recycled barrels, reconditioned barrels, because they don't have the steel works to make those gun barrels anymore. And that's really all they have, plus the Abrams tanks, if you deploy them in a place like the Ukraine, which is frozen over half the year, an Abrams tank on ice is like a cow on ice. You know, it just slips and doesn't go anywhere. It can't climb a hill. So all of that is just completely ridiculous. Everybody knows that, you know, the Ukraine started out with lots of Soviet technology. It was obsolete. Much worse than what the Russians have now, but at least it was something, and the Ukrainians knew how to service it, and they've run out of all that stuff. So now what they have is this NATO donated stuff that's really no good. You know, it just breaks down a lot, and they don't know how to fix it. They have to ship it to Poland for maintenance. So a lot of that stuff just gets burnt and abandoned, and the recent tendency is for it to run out of fuel, and then they jump out and run away and just abandon the tank or whatever. And so once they run out of this donated NATO stuff, they'll have nothing. There's nothing more.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about Ukraine in a second, but I think, Jeff, let's just quickly do the headlines. I'll be back with you now, Dimitri.
Good news, people.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Here is your headline.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. China's lashed out at the US, accusing Washington of abusing its power, waging wars, and harming international security. Moscow suspended its participation in the last remaining nuclear treaty between Russia and the US, and Beijing has called on the West to stop fanning the flames in Ukraine, warning that the conflict could soon spiral out of control and spill into South Asia.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Dmitry, you said earlier that Ukraine wasn't a country. Now, this is a little bit confusing because it appears to be a country on the map. What happened?
There was the Russian Empire, which included various other countries, Finland, for instance, and Poland, historical nations. And then when the Russian Empire fell apart, a large chunk of Russia was lumped into this new entity called the Ukraine by Vladimir Lenin. Basically, he thought that that was a good idea, and we'll never know why. He's never actually made it clear why he took a whole bunch of Russian provinces and made them into a whole new country that didn't exist before then. You know, as I said, Encyclopedia Britannica thought that the term Ukraine, meaning border in both Polish and Russian, was an obsolete term for some Russian provinces, which they were until that point. And then a strange thing happened when the USSR fell apart, because the Ukraine suddenly took on a life of its own. This non-entity became a political entity. Before, it was the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, which really, you know, had no sovereignty of any sort. It was just a, you know, an administrative entity within the Soviet Empire. And then suddenly it gained its independence. And what happened after that is it got horribly mismanaged. It was heavily industrialized, was the most industrialized country in Europe. It produced all sorts of stuff. It has huge mineral wealth. It has just everything it needed. And it basically frittered all of that away, destroyed its entire industrial base, sold it for scrap, ended up selling its soil, it has good soil, and shipping it to Germany for farms in Germany that were having problems with soil depletion. And was basically, by the time this U.S.-instigated revolt 9 years ago rolled around, the Ukrainian putsch, it was a destitute, destroyed place that was rapidly losing population. And now it's just a wreck. It's just a complete wreck. The eastern parts of it that are joining Russia or have already joined Russia are going to get rebuilt to Russian standards once the hostilities are over. They're going to do just fine. They're just going to be like the rest of Russia. But the rest of it, nobody knows what's going to happen to it, and nobody is particularly interested in investing the hundreds of billions or trillions that it would take to rebuild it, make it habitable again.
What do you see happening to Ukraine? I'm guessing now it's over. It's finished in its current form.
Well, no, I think it's going to be some kind of a nature preserve. I think most people will just leave. That's what's actually happening, because why do you want to live in a country that has nothing? You know, no electricity, no running water, no heat in the houses, no public transportation, can't get gas at a gas station, the banking system is wrecked. You know, what's there to do except leave, you know, somehow get out? And that's what most people are doing. So Europe is going to be just completely inundated with some very angry, displaced Ukrainians. A lot of them have gone to Russia. And the thing is that in Russia, Ukrainians are basically Russian. So they just dissolve in the general population instantly. You know, their children go to school, Your children all speak Russian anyway, so they're just more Russians, and they're not treated as anything distinct from the Russian people. So in Russia, the Ukrainian refugee problem is not a problem at all. In the West, it is a problem because they're completely different from the Western Europeans. They have a different mindset, different expectations, etc. They're not going to blend in easily. So this is a huge problem.
But geographically, Ukraine is probably going to look different, I'm guessing, with the East, you know, dissolving into Russia and perhaps the West, part of the West, dissolving into Poland.
Well, I think that Poland will destroy itself if it tries to swallow up a big chunk of the Ukraine. It will try and it will fail. Poland is not an all-powerful country. It's a relatively minor entity. And it's going to experience huge problems if it tries to swallow up a big chunk of the Ukraine.
There's a very interesting comment, Dmitry. Somebody is correcting me in the live chat, saying that it's actually referred to as the Ukraine as opposed to Ukraine. That's very interesting. I've often wondered that. Is it the Ukraine?
Oh, well, it's the word Ukraine means borderland. So the actual proper way to refer to it, I guess, is the Ukraine of Russia. Russia has lots of other borderlands too. They're called Ukraina, Ukraina. That's all the same thing. It's all the same word. It just means borderland.
So something that has been on my mind, and I've seen it come up a lot, Dmitry, is the invasion, or shall we say, the military operation. I know it's easy to compliment Putin, but if we were to criticize him, what would have been the criticisms here? It seems like he possibly underestimated the pushback, or have I got that wrong?
I think that he made a political calculation that was wrong, but he had to test it as a presupposition, which was that the Ukrainians have had enough of this, pro-Western madness, and would gladly treat the Russians as liberators, just quickly remove somehow by force or otherwise their government, or it would simply flee because it would see that it has zero public support. Basically the Ukraine would be ready to be reformed back along Russian lines. So he made that bet, and that bet turned out to be wrong because the entire Ukrainian society, especially the mass media and the internet and everything, was just completely inundated with American and Western operatives. And the people were just completely brainwashed because the previous 8 years were spent slandering Russia and, fashioning Russia into some kind of a bogeyman for the Ukrainians. So basically, the Ukrainians were all convinced that the Russians would come and eat their children. And you have to also understand that for 30 years of this quote-unquote Ukrainian promotion in the Ukraine, ended up with people not being very astute intellectually because their native language is Russian. Okay, everybody in the Ukraine speaks Russian, even in the most Western provinces. Their first language is usually Russian. Ukrainian is this village dialect fashioned into an official language by some linguists. But it's really kind of it's a pathetic language, and so people whose native language was Russian were going to schools and being taught using really pathetic textbooks with falsified history in the Ukrainian language, which they didn't really know very well, and ended up learning just because they were required to in school, and ended up extremely ignorant. And so ignorant people are much easier to manipulate than intelligent people who can think for themselves. So that was the trap that the entire Ukrainian population has pretty much fallen into.
Well, I was in that trap a few years ago. I mean, if you had asked me any of this stuff 5 years ago, I would have just, you know, parroted the Western media. But thank goodness that I've been able to, you know, apply some critical thinking over the years and pretty much 180 a huge amount of what I thought I knew. It's just, it's also very liberating, I will say that. Because once you figure out that a lot of junk coming out of the West is exactly that, it's junk, you realize that there's a lot more depth and substance also. You know, it's not just, the bad Russians, you know. There's so much more substance, and talking to somebody like you really just enhances that.
Well, the fact that the Western media spews junk and Western politicians lie continuously, that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that there are mass murders. They have caused millions of unnecessary deaths, untimely deaths, wrongful ones. They have caused tens of millions of people around the world to be either internally or internationally displaced, waves upon waves of refugees from the countries that they have destroyed for no particularly good reason. And, you know, these are things that cannot be ignored. Now, there are various ways to deal with it. One is to go and, you know, and kill the bastards. But nobody really wants to go and do that. So the other way to do that is to turn your back on them, which is what Russia is doing. You know, this is radio, so people can't see me, but here's Russia waving goodbye to the West. I'm waving my arm.
I think I might be in the right country then, because since I'm in South Africa, which is part of BRICS.
That's right. That's right.
Dmitry, just for clarity, what were Putin's motives? What was his modus operandi? Because everybody just keeps saying he's a madman and he just wants to go and kill and take over Ukraine. So let's just get this out of the way. What was his plan, his strategy?
He was on a humanitarian mission to prevent a genocide of the civilian population in Donetsk and Lugansk regions. It's as simple as that.
Sure. But what about all the talk about neo-Nazis and demilitarizing and, you know, I mean, were his troops involved in a lot of deaths in Ukraine?
Whose troops? Russian troops?
Putin's. Yeah, Russian troops.
Oh, yes. Yes, they slaughtered about 300,000 Ukrainian soldiers who were trying to attack Russian defensive lines. And that's ongoing. As far as civilians, the Russians do their best to spare civilians, and that is sometimes difficult because the Ukrainians have this tendency to hide their artillery and tanks in residential districts. So they'll park a weapon between two high-rise buildings and commence firing. And then how do you take out that artillery without also hitting one of those buildings? So a lot of collateral damage has been caused that way because the Ukrainians continually use their own population as human shields.
Dmitry, I'm going to just quickly do my last ad break. I'll be back with you in a moment.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Here's the story of another shooting with an ending that the left really hates. Last Friday evening, an argument between two groups led to the shooting death of a teenager and the wounding of two others at the Cielo Vista Mall in El Paso, Texas. According to the El Paso Times, police say after the shooting, the suspect ran away while pointing his gun toward the direction of bystanders, including a 32-year-old man. The bystander pulled out his gun as the suspect ran towards him and shot the suspect. Police said the bystander's license to carry a firearm. There were at least two other legally armed bystanders in the area where the shooting took place, but they were not involved. Texas has a constitutional carry gun law which allows 21-year-old and older residents to carry concealed weapons. Reason.com notes a 2021 survey of American gun owners conducted by Sentiment, which shows that gun owners in the U.S. use them for self-defense about 1.7 million times a year, something the media will never tell you. More evidence that we need to lock up the criminals and leave law-abiding citizens, gun owners, alone. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Negotiations on new rules for dealing with future pandemics have begun at the World Health Organization, WHO. The first meeting of an intergovernmental negotiating body took place behind closed doors on the 24th of February 2022. The UN Health Agency's 194 member countries were represented. It will be backed by a Washington-led effort to build a global pandemic prevention fund hosted by the World Bank. Among the suggested proposals for the pact is the sharing of data and genome sequences of emerging viruses and rules on equitable vaccine distribution.
The conversation continues.
How ridiculously complicated they've tried to make this global warming argument.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Dimitri, so you might have heard recently in the news that Xi Jinping has been speaking out a little bit against the West. What is China's relationship with Russia in this whole mess?
Well, I think that China and Russia are merging into a single Eurasian entity along economic lines. They politically don't interfere with each other. Basically, there's no intention to harmonize the political systems. But economically, they are very much a unit at this point. And the idea is that Russia is very good at huge projects, like big, huge transportation networks, pipeline systems, atomic icebreaker fleets, all of that sort of, huge industrial project type stuff is what Russia is really good at. Whereas China is really good at manufacturing all kinds of industrial and consumer goods, a huge nomenclature of stuff. So, and Russia is not that good at that yet. They really complement each other very strongly. Also, Russia has a tremendous resource base. The Siberian provinces, Krasnoyarsk region and Yakutia, for instance, are only like 15-20% explored. Most of it is just basically taiga and tundra, and nobody has actually figured out what's underneath there, and they're finding amazing things like there's a gigantic reservoir of fresh water under part of Yakutia that is bigger than Lake Baikal, which is the single largest body of fresh water on the planet. And the other thing is that water is under high pressure and high temperature. So you can directly pump it to a steam turbine, make electricity, heat entire cities for 100 years. So there are surprises like that lurking under the permafrost in various places. And so Russia will continue feeding China in terms of raw materials for a really long time, for many, many decades. And it's a really good relationship because the Chinese can return the favor by exporting lots of manufactured goods to Russia for its consumer economy and for its industrial base as well. So the two countries really complement each other. And in terms of their opposition to the West, their positions are somewhat different. Russia basically doesn't have to deal with the West at all at this point. You know, it used to make a lot of foreign revenue by exporting energy, but it no longer needs that foreign revenue particularly. especially doesn't need to earn euros or dollars, because it doesn't spend euros or dollars. And the share of the export revenue in the federal budget is dropping and dropping and dropping. Eventually, in a few years, it'll be nothing. And it's got really good trade relationships with various countries around the world at this point, in their own country, in their own currency. So they don't use the dollars or the euros in trade. They negotiate currency swaps, and sometimes they're backed by gold, which is a sort of new international currency at this point. So they're also liberating themselves from the dollar, whereas China still does a lot of trade with the United States and can't really get rid of it very easily, because there are a lot of people employed in the U.S. trade in China. Those people have to be converted from that to other kinds of trade. But the share of U.S. trade and European trade in the Chinese export mix is dropping and dropping and dropping every year. So eventually that'll be nothing as well. China has huge volumes of trade with the entire world, so it doesn't really need Europe or the United States.
And BRICS is going to become more significant in the next few years.
Well, yes, lots of countries want to join BRICS. There's an entire chorus line waiting to just to dance in, you know. And the question is, what do they all want? And the negotiations are very intricate, because BRICS is, you know, kind of an umbrella organization, but it's an umbrella organization for negotiating lots of one-on-one deals. And those one-on-one deals take time and a lot of effort. And so you can't just say, okay, we'll enlarge BRICS, it'll now include half the planet, because that's kind of hollow, because there won't be any actual substance within it. And so I think that this will take a while.
None of this is about hatred, though, towards the West, because it can appear like that. Oh, we just hate them. We don't want anything to do with them. It's not that, is it?
No, it's not really hatred at all. It's actually sadness, I would say, because, you know, these are important historical nations, you know, Germany, France. In Russian history, they've played a huge role. The Russians are very sad to see what has happened to these once great nations. They're sad that their government no longer is theirs. It's now just basically, you know, servants serving Americans. And not only is America run by senile idiots surrounded by really foolish people, but all of these people who are nominally in charge of European countries are also imbeciles. They're just completely imbecile. So there's no one in Europe for Russian diplomats to even talk to. And it's a very sad situation. And then in terms of one-on-one relationships, you know, which have always been important, the Russians are, you know, they have great deal of difficulty communicating with the European populations, because speech is so heavily censored, and the Russians are just not used to that and will not abide by those strictures. So what happens instead is they're just basically blocked out, because they use offensive words like mother and father, you know? And to the Russians, it's just completely ridiculous. So it's not hatred, it's pity.
And I mean, let's be honest, right? Putin, he just wants to take over all of Europe anyway. I mean, that's what CNN tells us.
Well, what's there in Europe for Putin? Why would he want to take it over? What do they have a rationale? I think most of what their general fallback is, Putin is crazy, so you don't have to understand his motives. Because crazy people, they don't have motives. They just do things because they're crazy. And so that doesn't really work because Putin is not crazy. He's sane.
No, that's for sure. Yeah, no, that's definitely, definitely for sure. I mean, all you have to do is listen to his speech from yesterday. As I said at the beginning of the show, it really shows that he is as sharp as a knife.
Yes, he's a technocrat. He's very legalistic. He's a stickler for rules. He does things within his internal circle by consensus. He requires consensus. He has the support of the vast majority of the Russian population, which is really hard to win because, you know, two Russians, three opinions is the rule. So if the Russians are single-mindedly in support of something, that must be something that's pretty good.
Okay, so give me your prognosis for the coming year, because we are running out of time now. So I'd like to just get a little keyhole into your mind. What do you see happening this year?
Pretty much more of the same, except the Ukraine thing will just basically peter out for lack of soldiers and weapons and international support. And then the West and the United States in particular will have no choice but to start to ignore it and switch to something else. Don't know what that something else will be. Looks like, Taiwan is a little bit too difficult for them to even touch. So they'll have to find out, maybe they'll start shooting down imaginary space saucers all over the place. I guess
balloons.
That seemed like a winning strategy for them for a week or so. So maybe they'll, you know, you have to understand that like 80% of Americans are on drugs most of the time. So you can get away with all kinds of nonsense to keep them bamboozled. And so the Americans will just distract their own population from the Ukraine. It's, you know, forget about Ukraine. Look at that other thing over there. And that's what Americans generally do. They march into a place, they screw up hugely, and then they declare victory and leave and forget that the place existed. I mean, who talks about Afghanistan anymore except the Russians who are actively there? They're building a pipeline through the place.
That's
feeding half the population at this point. Of course, you know, Afghanistan is in the Russian news, but who in the West remembers Afghanistan? Nobody.
And do you think Zelensky is going to get replaced?
Who cares? I mean, seriously, what difference does it make? I mean, who do you replace him with? He's already a clown who snorts cocaine all day. Or amphetamine probably, or both of them at the same time. I mean, what do you replace him with? A severed head hooked up to some kind of a chemical thing? I don't know. He could be replaced with an AI bot of some sort, Android, the first president Android. That would be perfect. I guess a requirement would be that it has to be able to play the piano with its penis. Because that's the one thing that Zelensky is world known for, world renowned, piano penis player.
This is true. Okay, we are very fast running out of time. Dmitry Orlov, how can I follow your work?
The easiest way to find my work is to go to boosty.to. To stands for the island of Tonga, which is where this website is registered. Boosty, boosty.to/club, CLUB, Orlov, ORLOV. And everything I write is there.
Dmitry Orlov, thank you for joining me in the trenches again. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Jeff, for keeping me sounding terrible today. I always need Murray and Jeff to make me sound like an amateur. Actually, I don't. I sound like an amateur without anybody's help. It's actually, I'm just projecting, Jeff. I'm just projecting. What I actually need is somebody to make me sound better. Don't forget to send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Download the app on the Google and the Apple Store, because this conversation that I just had with Dmitry Orlov, you need to share. Dmitry is just such a champion. I love the way he describes and explains things. So share this conversation around. And it's a great way to also get people to listen to TNT Radio. I am a big fan of TNT, and I love what we are doing at the station. We are challenging established narratives and presenting alternative and independent analysis and commentary. It really is such a wonderful thing. Thank you to everybody in the live chat. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all my housekeeping done. I'll catch you tomorrow. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.